Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about collected editions from the galaxy's greatest comic, 2000 AD. I'm Eamon Clark. I'm in London, the Bloomsbury Tavern, with senior graphic novels editor from Rebellion, Keith Richardson. Keith, back for your third appearance on the podcast.
I am indeed. It's my favourite podcast. So when you call, I just can't say no.
Thank you so much.
Hello,
Keith.
Everybody.
Yes. So lots of stuff to talk about. We're going to be talking, I think, about the treasury of British comics.
Yes.
We've brought one book in particular, but there's loads of stuff going on at the moment.
There is indeed.
I wanted to perhaps...
And we've now got more to draw from after our last acquisition.
We've got even more now.
We pretty much own all the British comics out there, bar the DC Thompson stuff and one or two other things. So
yeah.
It's got even more exciting over the course of the last year.
So I'm going to ask you a little bit about the curatorship of all that.
And yes.
Choosing what to bring out next. But I wanted to just go back to a sad note, because obviously, as we record, it's a month or more since we heard the sad news about Carlos Esquerra no longer being with us, when he was still producing great quality work.
Indeed.
You've just given me a copy of the trade of Sniper Elite Resistance, which, of course, for the third issue, he did a variant cover for you.
He did a variant cover featuring his beloved characters, the Rat Pack. I was blown away when I saw it. I thought, you know, it one of the best covers, and no slight on Carlos, but I think it was one of the best covers he's done in a while.
Yeah.
Really fantastic. And I did approach about buying it at one stage. I mentioned it to him, but alas, you know, it all pales into significance. You know, unfortunately, we lost him. But I'm just honoured that his cover has graced a comic book which I've written.
Yeah.
And I almost felt guilty that his last cover wasn't on a piece of work that he had worked in conjunction with John on.
Yes.
It would have been more apt, but completely humbled by that. And it's a fantastic thing. Beautiful cover. Whoever owns it, well done.
Yes.
You've got a real corker of a cover on your hands.
Whoever's got the Rat Pack cover for Sniper Elite Resistance Part 3 from Carlos, well done. I hope it's, you know, hanging in a special place of honour, because it's a fantastic cover.
Yeah, it is. I'm really jealous. Really jealous. I dare say that if Carl Fairbairn had actually been on the cover as well, that would have been an easy choice to grace the front cover of the trade.
Yeah. Absolutely astonishing. So there it is, Sniper Elite Resistance. I've got a copy thanks to your good self. Thank you very much for that. And as you say, I've got you to sign it, which may...
devalue it somewhat, well, yes.
A chap I had on the podcast, a music broadcaster, a chap called Andrew Harrison, who does a podcast called Big Mouth, he did a thing on his own podcast about Carlos's passing, and he said that it affected him in the same way that David Bowie's death did.
Yeah.
And I wonder just, you know, what it was like at the Rebellion office when the news came in. Were you in that day?
I was in. I think the news broke. I think I'd just left the office. I'd left a bit early for some reason. I can't remember why. Definitely work related though.
Yeah.
And somebody, in fact it was an actual creator who texted me, the amazingly talented and lovely Alec Worley, sent me a text. And I was flabbergasted.
Yes.
When I found out about it.
As we all were. Yeah.
An absolute shocker. And you don't quite know how to react. I mean, it's been a strange year for me, because of course, you know, in August my own father died.
Yes.
And it felt like not as much of a gut punch, but it was like, what, another one? Has there not been enough this year already?
Yeah.
For me personally.
Sure.
Because, you know, let's face it, you know, Carlos is one of the cornerstones of 2000 AD, and I think it's fair to say it will never be the same again.
Yeah.
2000 AD is going to be a little bit poorer for it, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's an astonishing loss to us all. I mean, he was such a great guy. You know, he was always friendly.
And that's the most important thing. You know, we all love him as the artist on Dread and Strontium Dog and so many other brilliant strips. But, you know, forgetting all of that, he was a fantastic human being, a really, really friendly chap. I don't think I've ever seen him kind of have a bad word to say about anyone at a con. He's always given up his time. He's been really good with fans. He's been really good with other pros. He's even been good with us horrible editorial types. And the world's just lost an incredibly nice human being.
Yeah, it's astonishing. Yeah. I mean, on a slightly, light, sort of brighter note, we do have out from the Treasury of British Comics a new collection of El Mestizo.
Yes.
Again, another one of his 70s battle strips, I believe.
Tinged again with sadness, because I remember contacting him about it, both him and Alan Hebden, to say that I was bringing it out, and Carlos was overjoyed by that. I think it was, I could be wrong, but I'm sure he said in the past on record that it was one of his favourite characters.
Yes, one of his favourite things he's ever done. Yeah.
And he was just over the moon that we were bringing it out. And if my short-term memory is terrible, but if memory serves me correctly, I'm pretty sure it's quite bittersweet, because the actual we got advanced copies in just after he died.
Right.
And I've heard back from Alan Hebden, who's got his, and said this looks fantastic. And I would just love to have kind of just got some kind of reaction from Carlos, just to know that he liked it would have been just made my day.
Yeah.
Again, it wasn't to be.
So, I mean, as that is sad, obviously, that he didn't get to see it, but there it is. There is a collection of El Mestizo, which is out now. Carlos Esquerra, Alan Hebden, one of their favourite strips from the 70s. Quite a different strip, in a way, for Battle. And, pick it up, because it's fantastic.
It's brilliant. Yeah. Man with No Name. If you like those spaghetti westerns, then you're going to love it. If you like Carlos's artwork, then you're really going to love it, because I still think it's some of his best artwork.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can tell both him and Alan had a ball working on it.
Yeah.
And I think it was a little bit ahead of its time, or maybe it was because Battle's so kind of war orientated. And especially World War II, a lot of people overlooked it the first time round. But you read it again, and it's just so tight, so incredibly brilliant. And like I said, I still think it's one of the best things Carlos has ever done.
Right.
And that's saying a lot when you consider the amount of brilliant stories he's turned in over the years.
Yes, the quality of his work, the quantity of his work, So El Mestizo's out now. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on one of those and reading that.
Yeah.
Let's turn to the book for today, because we've chosen another new release from the Treasury of British Comics. Tell us what we've got today.
Well, today we've got the amazingly bizarre and weird Black Max.
Yes, Black Max Volume 1 by, let's have a look, Frank Pepper, Ken Mennell, Eric Bradbury, we've talked about before, you and I, Keith.
Yes.
And of course, first time I think we talked about Alfonso Font.
Font, yes.
Yeah, the artist. So that's going to be interesting. And this is from the pages of Thunder Comics.
Yes.
1970s to 1971. I should perhaps mention it's got a beautiful new cover that Alfonso Font has done with colours by Len O'Grady, presumably because I know he's written the introduction for this book. So
yes,
this is something you could commission from him for the volume, was it?
It was indeed, yeah. I was lucky enough to kind of track him down via his agent, and I was just so stoked that he agreed to do the cover.
Right.
Because there weren't any Black Max covers that graced the front of Thunder. There were a few bits of art we could use, but as you've seen, there's not... The artwork's amazing, let's say that first and foremost, but
yes.
There weren't any kind of big splash pages in there, or just not enough for a cover, really. There was a pin-up that graced one of the annuals, but you couldn't really see Batmax in there, and I don't think it was Alfonso Font. And then there was a Thunder album cover, painted cover, which was lovely, but again, I don't think it was Alfonso that produced that either. That's the one. Yeah, it's actually
it's
the annual,
on the back page.
The Thunder 1972 annual.
Yes.
And as good as it is, I just wanted something a little bit stronger.
Sure.
And we were overjoyed when we managed to get him in. Failing that, I probably would have had to turn to my own mucker, Chris Weston.
Yes.
Because he's done a couple of great Black Max pin-ups in the past himself.
He has done some wonderful Black Max work. Yes, I've seen some great commissions from him on Black Max. And, and of course he did that fantastic Dracula cover for
Indeed,
Dracula file.
And that, look how that turned out.
Yeah.
And that was a great piece of work. So.
Okay, so we're back in the early 70s, British Boys comic. We've got a strange strip called Black Max. We have talked about it briefly on the podcast before, but just remind us, what's the setup of Black Max?
Okay, well, Black Max is a kind of baron. He comes from kind of like quite a rich German family. It takes place in World War One, and he's a fighter pilot, and he's got this secret. His secret is he's got these giant... He starts off with one giant trained bat, which he brings into battle to fight against the British pig dogs, as he often references them, as he often references to them as.
Yeah.
And he starts off with one, which he's trying to keep secret. And of course, a plucky British pilot called Tim Wilson, Lieutenant Tim Wilson, discovers this secret. And then Max spends an inordinate amount of time trying to take out Tim because he doesn't want that secret to kind of become public knowledge. Strange. Early on, I think he says something like, I want to fill the British... I want to fill the British pilots. I'm paraphrasing. Basically says he wants to kill them and fill them with fear.
Like, yes.
Just the first one will do.
Yeah.
It's quite strange. And it's also revealed in there, by the way, that he's... Because he does meet up with his grandfather at one stage when he's trying to get access to more giant bats. And his grandfather reveals that they may or may not be related to a race of bat people. Which makes him even cooler.
Possibly descended from a race of bat people. Baron Maximilian von Claw.
Yeah. And you see, when I read that... See, I'd often heard about this strip. But I'd never read it until we acquired it in the Treasury. So it was one of the first things I kind of sought out. And it did not disappoint. And that is why I thought it was such a good shoe-in as a kind of horror character for the Scream the Mystic special.
Yes.
It's such a good fit in there. But yet the fact that he's related to a race of bat people, I love that idea.
Yeah, because he's back in the Scream the Mystic special, written by Keck W. and art by Simon Colby.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
And of course, you know, it's about a month or 6 weeks since that came out this year.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully did well, I hope.
Yeah, the Scream Mystery special went great guns. I hope we're doing more in the future.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fantastic. I'm looking forward to more stories. But just to go back, so we've got, as you say, it's a First World War story, which is unusual. We think of Charlie's War as being the great First World War story about, obviously, the terrible times of the infantry. Here we've got the Royal Flying Corps and their German opponents in Sopwith Camel biplanes, and then the Germans in their Fokker, you have to be careful how you say that, their Fokker triplanes.
Yeah.
And one of the astonishing things is that these planes look like they're held together by canvas and string.
They do.
And they are, in fact, pretty much, you know, that's what it is. And they get through a lot of planes in this book, don't they?
A hell of a lot of planes. Every episode, a plane is downed.
Yes.
Not always just the British planes. It's often Black Max going down as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think, I mean... It gives me pause for thought about the pilots who really did fly these things, to climb into these death traps.
That's essentially what they are.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Wrapped up in, obviously, the thickest leather coats and so on, because they were freezing up there, no doubt.
we should point out, and I'm not preempting it here, Eamon, but we all go to, and rightly so, Joe Colquhoun as, like, the quintessential World War One comic book artist. But I think Alfonso Font could almost give him a run for his money.
Yes.
Would you say that's blasphemy?
No, I don't think it's blasphemy at all.
The detail on there is fantastic.
Because it starts with, I think it's created by Ken Mennell and Eric Bradbury. And I think it starts with an Eric Bradbury episode. And then it rapidly, I think, turns to Alfonso Font. And it's just glorious. I mean, the scenes of black and white air combat, but we, as you say, with the added value of giant bats.
The giant bats, yes.
Giant bats which can hide themselves in the back seat of a German triplane as well, and come out on command, because Von Klaw has some sort of telepathic or some sort of control of the
bats. Some kind of control over them, that's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's quite interesting, the contrast between, you've got this, you know, the great, very authentic detail on the uniforms, the weaponry, the planes themselves, and then you've got the kind of the fantasy elements with the bats, and also Von Klaw himself, who looks like a cross between Nosferatu and a kind of weird zombie.
Yes. Yes, he's great, isn't he?
He's a very odd-looking character.
He's a very odd-looking character with his sort of pointed teeth.
Which nobody ever really picks up on.
Yeah.
No one's like, wait a minute, you don't look kosher. There's something a little bit off-kilter about you.
He does, yeah. He looks amazingly strange. And there's his triplane with its big bat sort of insignia on the side, which probably should have been some sort of giveaway. Whereas the British, we've got Tim Wilson, who's a real sort of fresh-faced...
Now, Tim Wilson's interesting because, you know, you often hear... I know Pat's talked a lot in the past about working-class protagonists, working-class heroes in comic strips and... You know, we a lot of people tend to think that they all came into fashion with the likes of Battle,
yeah,
and Charlie's War, and also in 2008 with Savage. But Tim Wilson's the son of a circus performer.
Yes,
you've got a very working class hero as a, you know, a pilot, a lieutenant in the British Army, and I kind of think that's pretty cool. And it's great because, of course, Von Klaw himself is a baron.
Yes.
So that you've got the class war there as well. If you're looking for a bit of kind of subtext, isn't there?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, isn't it? Because, yes, and of course, there's two things. But his circus background allows him to swing underneath airplanes while they're in the air, to jump from one airplane to another.
He's very agile.
He gets him out of trouble on several occasions. But also, he's constantly in conflict with the British officers above him.
Yeah.
Because for the first half of this volume... they don't believe him about the giant bat.
And yeah, it's actually quite funny. I think, is it his first commander? His name's in there. But
is this Major Gromit Groucher?
It's the Major Groucher.
Groucher,
who's constantly berating him for making up these weird, fantastical stories about giant bats. And then when he finally does see one of these bats for themselves, he ends up being involved in a crash where he gets amnesia and forgets about the whole thing.
Of course. Highly convenient amnesia.
Yeah. Every major that Tim serves under turns into this weird version of like a J. Jonah Jameson.
Yes.
They completely hate him.
Yeah.
And don't believe anything he says. And there's a couple of times where he almost gets court-martialed in there.
Yeah. So... I mean, it is astonishing. I hadn't
good
actually,
melodrama.
Yeah, it is very good. I hadn't really picked up, as you say, on the sort of class angle to it, but you're quite right, because yeah. Tim Wilson, who strikes you as perhaps not particularly clubbable in the Royal Flying Corps,
yeah,
which was, you know, an air force of gentlemen, as it were, and he doesn't quite fit in with the majors and so on that he keeps reporting to. He's forever been, you know...
He's always getting berated.
Yeah. As you say, he's almost court-martialed on several occasions. He's almost killed, of course, by Von Klaw on several occasions, but manages to escape.
So I was going to say, you get a sense that he managed to get into the Corps because he's such a skilled pilot.
Yes.
You know, it's not to do with his, well, it wouldn't have anything to do with his class, because as we've established, he's a very much, you know, from the off, we're told he's a working class guy.
Yeah. So that's very interesting. I mean, without giving too much away, in the second half of the book, the rest of the Royal Flying Corps start to believe him, because there's more and more evidence of not just one giant bat, but several.
Several.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And then the artwork, as we say, we've got... we start with a bit of Eric Bradbury, and then we've got Alfonso Font. We've got these planes in the air, and, of course, to add to it, you've got Von Klaw, who looks like Nosferatu.
Yes.
And giant bats.
Yeah. And if you think Von Klaw looks like Nosferatu, well, wait till you come across his grandfather.
Yes.
Later on in the book.
Yes, he pops up later on.
Yeah. Fantastic shots of him in the shadows. Some fantastic imagery of him in the shadows, and you really get a sense that he's based on, you know, on an old vampire.
Yeah. So, Eric Bradbury, we've talked about on the podcast before.
Yes. Now, Eric Bradbury illustrated the first episode.
Yes.
And also came up with a really gorgeous logo.
Yes.
To start things off, where you see Von Claus, Fokker is kind of merged in with the actual title of the book.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing. And that first episode is lovely, but it's one of those rare instances where I think... it was the right decision to bring in Alfonso Font, because I think he slightly shades him on this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he really does make the character his own.
And Font, as we say, he does an introduction for this book. He says he was a very young artist at the time.
Yeah.
And he's brought over, he's contacted to do this Black Max series, and of course since then he's gone on to be a very successful European artist. I know he does a lot of I think he does Western stories and things like that, some of this stuff is very popular on the continent.
Yeah.
But here, just for a young artist churning out these weekly, what are they,
it tends to be about 3 pages, I believe.
I think they are three, yes, you're right.
Yeah.
3 pages, and they're just fantastic, aren't they? I mean, the battle scenes, the bats, the facial features. Tim Wilson looks like a newspaper strip hero, Forever Shown would either, I don't know if it's freckles around his face or if that's sort of like Sutton Smoke from the goggles.
I tend to believe it's probably freckles.
Right.
Even though it's all in black and white, I see him as kind of like a blonde haired, freckly, blue eyed,
Blue eyed boy.
Yeah.
And then Von Claw, as you say, is just demonic.
He's just absolutely freakish.
Freakish.
As
yeah.
is his grandfather, and of course his aide.
His assistant Morg, is it? Yes.
It's Morg, yeah.
That's great stuff. This is a very gothic theme to this, because of course Von Claw has a castle with a dungeon.
Yeah, castle.
Exactly, a hidden castle, which later on in the book does something even more extraordinary, because they find out why it's so hard to actually locate this castle, which I won't spoil. But
don't spoil that one.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. So there we have it. So we've got Font, who's new, but he's a young chap doing this. It's great. Frank Pepper, we've mentioned, because he's the creator of Roy of the Rovers.
That's correct.
We might talk about Roy of the Rovers in a few minutes. And Ken Mennell, who's a name that I haven't really come across before, but famous for creating the Steel Claw for British comics.
That's right. I mean, this is the thing with the Treasury line. It's always, I think we might have talked about it on a previous podcast, but it's always difficult trying to find out about some of these writers.
Yeah.
Trying to glean more information. Artists, not so much a problem, but some of these poor artists, a lot of their stories are kind of slipped into the ether of time, and it's really hard trying to find out some stuff. But luckily, we know Ken Mennell because he worked on such a huge British character.
Yes.
That being said, it's hard to tell where he started and Frank Pepper left off, but I believe after the just around the time when without giving too much away, Von Claw goes from having one bat to several,
right,
and we get a bit more of his backstory, I believe that's where Ken Mennell took over the reins on the writing.
Right.
I can't be 100% sure. If there's anyone out there in podcast land that knows a little bit more, please contact me and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. But that's why I believe Ken took over on the strip.
Because, yes, I mean, we have talked about this before, Keith, because of course, no credit cards.
Yes.
That's a Kevin O'Neill invention from 2000 AD.
Yep.
Bless him, thank goodness for him.
Good man.
Yes. And one thing that I've spoken about before that the Treasury does so well, firstly, it gives us beautiful collections of this stuff. The second thing is it brings to our attention these creators who were, in a way, they were just, I suppose they were treated as just work for hire to churn this stuff out.
Yeah, very much so.
And how great that they're now getting some recognition. They get their names on the front of covers. People are starting to talk about them more. So I think that's fantastic. The other thing I've got to mention, of course, and again, we talked about it last time when we did... it wasn't the Leopard of Lime Street the last time, it was Von Hoffman's Invasion. That's right.
Yes.
But the reprographics department, again, have pulled out another blinder, haven't they?
They have indeed.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be Joseph Morgan again.
Yeah.
Bless him. He's... Yeah, he's probably one of the best guys in the business at reprographics. Hopefully he won't listen to this, because he'll get a bit of an ego. I'll have to destroy him all over again, like I did after Von Hoffman.
Yes, so Joseph Morgan, and then it also mentions Richard Tustain and Emma Denton in the credits.
Yeah.
And again, because you're working from pages rather than from, you know...
Straight from those old bog paper comic books.
Yeah.
Yep.
And as Jim Moon commented on my podcast when we discussed the Dracula file, it probably looks better now than it did when it was first published.
Without a doubt.
Okay.
I'd go along with that.
So, I mean, the Black Max is just, in a way, it's just a bonkers war story, because you've got these giant killer train bats and this Maximilian von Claw, who constantly escapes the British in the same way that Tim Wilson constantly escapes him. But it's fantastic. It's just wonderful. And it looks so good. It's in a nice soft cover paperback trade from Rebellion and the Treasury of British Comics. It's $10.99.
Bonkers. I think I dare anyone to kind of go for it and not have a wry grin on their face by the time they've finished.
And it's also, I know, because we often mention them, but lots of creators have a particular fondness for this sort of stuff from their own childhoods. So we know that Chris Weston has done some beautiful commissions and sort of pin-ups and so on, you mentioned,
based on
Black Max. I'll again mention the forum member Manga Max, because this is one of his favourite characters, and we often see commissions from him from various artists that he's got.
And let's not forget Keck W, who's a big fan, which is why he ended up bringing him back for the Screaming Misty special. In fact, it was a conversation that took place at the 40th anniversary.
Right.
Between myself and Keck. And he approached me about Black Max and said, hey, are you going to do anything with this fantastic character?
Yeah.
And like I said before, I thought Scream would be the perfect vehicle for him, because I see him as a horror character.
Yes.
Very much so. There's something just otherworldly about him, especially if what his grandfather suspects is true, and they are descended from a race of bat people.
Bat people,
so
yes.
The perfect fit for a horror comic.
Yeah. So, marvellous stuff, as you say, and it is very, you know, very popular with some of the current creators who we're very fond of. And as you say, it's in the Scream and Misty special.
That's great.
And hopefully we're going to get more about Black Max.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping there will be another volume in the future, because, of course, when Thunder ended up merging with Lion...
Yes.
And the strip did continue, and then there was a spin-off... Dr. Grant's The Demon Dwarf, who doesn't turn up in this volume, but he should turn up in the next one. And the spin-off was also illustrated by Alfonso Font.
Right.
And apart from those two strips, I don't think Alfonso did much more in the British comics industry.
Again,
I could be wrong, but...
I think he goes back to Europe, doesn't he?
Having seen what he's done here... I'd like to think, if I was around at the time and there was this little title out there called Battle, I would have fought tooth and nail to get him on more stories, more strips.
Yeah. Oh, well, but obviously he went on to a very successful career.
He did indeed.
Yeah. Yep. So fantastic. But as you say, it would have been
our
lovely
loss
to see more.
Our loss.
Favourite moment from Black Max Volume 1, if you have one, or a favourite page?
I have a favourite page. Now, it's page 79.
Right, let me turn to that.
Where there's an army of bats who are unleashed on the Brits.
Yep.
Max is in his Fokker. Tim, unfortunately, is grounded.
Yes.
But he's managed to get hold of a machine gun. And he's having a bit of a standoff against Max, who's flying towards him, all guns blazing, and Tim's returning fire. And it's just a page full of beautiful carnage. There's this really really grim middle panel where you see these poor Tommies just getting blown away, and it's really kind of graphic and dangerous and exciting and kinetic. And
yeah,
it's just an absolutely fantastic page. I would there's so many in here, but I think that this shades a couple of others. But it's got everything you want. It's got a bit of action, some gorgeous carnage in there. You've got the protagonist, the antagonist, and some gorgeous bats as well for the measure. So and it's got that brilliant Eric Bradbury logo as well.
It's got it all, hasn't it?
You know,
it's a title page. Scores of bats swoop from the skies is the top tagline at the top.
I only wish that there was a moment in there where The Max calls Tim Wilson a British pig dog. He does say England a dog.
England a dog.
Or he thinks England a dog because of the thought bubble, but I do like his use of pig dog.
Yes. Splendid. So we'll grant you that one virtually, Keith. That becomes virtually your page.
Well, if there's anyone that's actually got it, then get in contact with me, because I would actually buy it off you.
If this page still exists, please get in touch.
And you want to sell it, of course. Yeah. I would buy it off you.
Keith at Rebellion or mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. I've also got a title page, page 46.
Okay.
And this is, again, because it's got it all. It's got the giant bat, it's got some air combat, it's got Tim Wilson clawing his way along the fuselage. And I suppose the only thing he hasn't got is Von Claw on there himself.
Yeah.
But you do get Eric Bradbury's sort of top title panel, and the crippled bomber hurtled towards the ground! Exclamation mark.
Tim's trying to save another pilot, but doesn't his pilot get knocked out?
I believe so. The pilot's either unconscious or dead, and we're out of control. So, and again, you've got the giant bat destroying this plane in midair.
That is a gorgeous page.
They are fantastic title pages, aren't they?
There's so many. I think, you know, there's a run, especially between, like, pages, around pages 49 through to, like, 80, that are just, they're all so good. There's earlier pages in there. I keep on talking about Von Hoffman's Von Hoffman. I've gone on to a different.
Oh right, yeah. Von Claw.
Von Claw's grandfather. There's a page 48 where you see his grandfather who just, you know, it's Dracula.
Yeah.
Come to life on the page, and he's covered in shadow, and you get a final panel where all the bats are hanging upside down. And
it's great, isn't it?
It's a gorgeous page. You've got machine guns firing at biplanes, and it's really lovely. But my other page just about shades it, I think.
So Black Max, Volume 1, Frank Pepper, Ken Mennell, Eric Bradbury, Alfonso Font, great stuff from the Treasury of British Comics.
It's brilliant.
It's enormous fun. Thank you, Keith. Thanks for meeting up to talk about it.
Let's
talk about what else we've got coming from the Treasury of British Comics. I mentioned that we had the Scream Misty special.
Yes.
Another one, which was very good. I enjoyed it even more than last year's.
Oh, great. Was there a particular strip that stood out for you?
I think the Black Max one is the one that's in my mind at the moment. You know, the Simon Colby art and the fact that Black Max, dare we say it, is back and is a present threat is going to be, it appears. So that was great. I mean, it was great to see work by Rich McAuliffe in there. Lizzie Boyle was in there as well.
Rich done a great job. He's a really underrated writer. I love what he came up with. It was funny, a little bit outrageous, and a really interesting character.
Decomposition Jones,
great.
Yes, a 70s exploitation crossed with vampires and zombies. Right.
And of course, Lizzie done a sterling job with her strip as well.
Yeah, absolutely, fantastic. Yeah.
There are a lot more one-offs this time around.
Right.
Which we needed to do. I was, with the first Screaming Misty special, I was under the impression, it was my fault, really. I was getting a bit ahead of myself, but I thought that we would be able to get something out on a more regular basis, but it wasn't to be. So that's why you've got the likes of The 13th Floor and Black Max, which were kind of set up for more of a story arc. Things changed, so this time round we made sure we had more one-offs in there, and I think it was all the better for it.
Okay.
But there will be more 13th Floor, if you say that now.
Excellent.
Definitely. And hopefully there will definitely be some, well, I think hopefully, there will be at some stage more Black Max as well.
Great, so we've got that to look forward to.
Yeah.
Out now we've got El Mestizo, which we've highly recommended.
Yes.
Because obviously, you know, great work by Carlos and Alan Hebden.
I'm sure someone at some stage is going to pop up on your podcast to talk about it.
Hopefully, yes. Get in touch if you want to talk about El Mestizo. On the shelf today in Forbidden Planet, we saw Sniper Elite Resistance, the collective volume.
Yeah, that's not bad, is it?
That's fantastic.
It's not a bad little book at all.
I mean, apart from, you know, strange writer names in the screen, Misty Special and so on, is this the first time you've been able to go into a shop and see your name on a book as an author?
Do you know what? I think it is. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. I've done a few bits and bobs in the past.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be the first one to hold my hand up and say, I'm not the best writer in the world, but sometimes in the need to get more original material into something and not having the right budget, I do try my hand. And it doesn't always work out for the best, but I'm kind of happy with the way Sniper Elite turned out. I put a lot of effort into it, and then I'd go through it. There's no nepotism. I did have to do a proper pitch because we were going to do a Sniper Elite comic anyway.
Yeah.
I've edited a couple of one-offs in the past, and I did ask if I could write it because I had an idea. A publishing manager for a curveball, so I had to change the idea slightly.
Right.
That curveball was the actual setting of where most of Sniper Elite, well, all of Sniper Elite takes place. But yeah, I'm kind of really happy with the way it turned out, and I love working with Patrick Goddard.
Yes. Yeah.
The guy's so underrated, and I really want to work with him again now. I've kind of got everything crossed that it does quite well, because I might be able to do some more.
Yeah.
I've just got this idea brewing now. What I want to do, I would like for Carl Fairburn, our titular sniper, to maybe mix it up with a few other characters from the pages of Battle. So I've got a little idea brewing about him and a certain death squad.
Right.
But hey, we've got to see how well this one's gone down. If it's gone down well, I can do some more. I'd love to.
Okay. So the collected Sniper Elite Resistance is out now, and you'll find that great Carlos Esquerra cover in the back of the book as well.
Yeah.
Also out by the time this podcast comes out, of course, is Ken Reed's Creepy Creations will be out as well.
A lovely coffee table art book.
Yeah. I mean, that is really looking very beautiful. That's a hardback book with full page spreads of all these weird, creepy creations he did. Remind me, which comic were these appearing?
They would have been in... They turned up in the pages of Shiver and Shake.
Shiver and Shake, that's right.
Yeah, the worldwide weirdies that are in Whoopi.
Right.
And there's going to be volume one of Worldwide Weirdies out next year. So if you enjoy the creepy creations, you know, a natural progression, you're going to love Worldwide Weirdies.
Fantastic. So this podcast is coming out the first week of January. What can you tease us with for 2019 from the Treasury?
For 2019? See, I'm so stuck on... We just basically filled in the schedule for 2020.
Right.
So I've got all these 2020 titles rolling around my head. I'm trying to... I do know we've got a lot of great comics out in 2019, and a lot of great collections. In terms of new bits, I can confirm that there's going to be another Vigilant.
Right, so fantastic.
For those of you that liked it,
yep.
Good news. For those of you that were lukewarm on it, this one's going to be really good.
Right.
And a lot better, so give it a chance. And it's going to be Simon Furman again, Simon Colby again, the brilliant Len O'Grady colouring.
Yep.
And there's going to be a few backups as well that, you know, people are going to enjoy. So I'm really looking forward to that because there's so many of those characters I love.
Right.
And I've had a pitch from Simon Furman that's really solid as well.
And
I'm happy with that one.
From the Vigilant, or rather, you know, from before and now into the Vigilant, but Deathwish, I think there's a Deathwish volume coming out.
Deathwishes, yeah. All the Deathwish stories from Speed.
Yep.
And that's a great looking thing. Obviously written by Barry Tomlinson, all the artwork's by Vanyo. It obviously it's the early story, so there's it's very sports orientated, but there's him getting involved, we've got lots of capers as well, and then hopefully that'll go down well and we'll move on to the stories in Tiger and then eventually Eagle, where it becomes more of a supernatural strip.
Right.
But this is the earliest Death Wish stories, his origin story, and it's very, very enjoyable.
Okay. And there's a second volume of Leopard of Lime Street, I know, is on the rails.
Yes. Do you know what? I was reading through it. It's got a... You must be familiar with the character Venom from Spider-Man.
Yes.
Like, somebody over at Marvel might have been reading Leopard from Lime Street because the leopard manages to get hold of a suit that kind of affects his personality. And it's very, very similar to Venom. He's stronger, he's more agile, and he's been affected by this new costume he kind of gets. So the costume's not quite as sentient as Venom is, but there's lots of similarities there. And of course, these leopard stories were published before Venom was on the scene. So, some of the villains get quite colourful as well. It's not just your standard bank robbers or...
Yeah, that was what it was mostly, wasn't it? Yeah.
Swag band types. There's a few interesting, colourful characters in there as well. So I really enjoyed putting that volume together.
Fantastic. You mentioned sports comics, because I think... am I right in thinking there's a Billy's Boots comic book coming out next year?
Poor Joseph in our Reaper graphics department has had a titanic task on his hand cleaning up the earliest Billy's Boots pages. So unfortunately that is going to slip back into 2020.
Oh, right.
But
okay.
It will be out very early 2020. Like, I think we're now putting it in January.
Yeah.
So that we'll have to wait a little while for that.
Okay.
But we do have some fantastic Royder Rovers.
Well, yes, in my hand, because I just bought it from Forbidden Planet this morning.
Aha.
Is the hardback Royder Rovers kickoff, Rob Williams, Ben Wilshire, Royder Rovers editor, it says, is one Keith Richardson again.
This would be true.
Letters by the great Jim Campbell as well.
Yes.
Here is new Royder Rovers. And it looks fantastic.
Oh, I'm glad you like the look of it.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to think which nephew or niece I'm going to put this in the hands of for Christmas as well. New Royder Rovers, so that's fantastic as well. And Billy's Boots, I'm looking forward to. I was a huge Billy's Boots fan for some reason.
Billy's Boots was one that stood out for me. I used to collect Royder Rovers. I was ravenous when it came to British comics. I collected so many. But I was a Royder Rovers reader. Funnily enough, didn't really read Tiger that much.
Right.
But Royder Rovers was a big thing for me. I always preferred Billy's Boots though.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's only now with hindsight, flicking back on the pages, like, he's, when you think about it, he's a massive cheat.
Yes.
You know, he doesn't do anything on his own merit. He doesn't, you know, he gets the glory of winning games and getting a winning goal and winning cup games by scoring a last minute blaster. But he's actually a cheat. He's got no ability whatsoever.
He's got magic boots.
Which, in a weird way, makes it even more interesting.
Yes. Yeah. And how many times did he lose those boots or have them stolen or, you know, struggle to get them back just in time for the final?
Well, this is right. All kind of taking them to like a cricket ground and play cricket.
Yes.
There's several stories where he's playing cricket in the boots. In fact, I haven't read many of those, so I don't know if he's got a separate pair of boots that he uses only for cricket.
Right.
There you go. It's a fantastic comic, but yeah, it was. Again, you know, we don't have any of the original artwork for Billy's Boots, so we're doing all the paid scanning. Now, it looks like the original Billy's Boots run, you'd have a colour double-page spread. And it looked like for almost the duration of its run in... I'm trying to remember what comic it was in now. Having a bit of a brain fart, but was it Thunder? No, it wasn't. Where it originally ran...
Right. I can't remember which
comic. There's people
it was in.
Shouting at me right now.
Yeah.
I'm looking after a lot of comics here, folks. But it looked like the plates must have been shifting every week on the presses.
Right.
Because all the colours were a little bit off. And
right.
And it was driving poor Joe mad. Rather than driving into an early grave, we just said, do you know what, we're going to put it back a little bit, so it gives him a little bit more time to kind of give it a bit of TLC.
But okay.
I'm excited about that one coming out.
So there's loads out at the moment.
Yes.
There's loads to come in the future. You've got this huge archive, which in a way you're one of the curators of, and you've got all sorts of, I would imagine, complicated decisions to make about which stuff can we do the Reaper graphics on, which stuff is going to be popular and sell. Yes. You know, choosing what to do next. But it must also be, it must also feel a little bit like a kid in a sweet shop. It's yeah. all there, isn't it?
Well, this is it. Well, it is and it isn't, because we still do have a few big gaping holes in the archive.
Right.
I've become a regular visitor to the world of eBay, trying to buy up copies that we don't have.
Yes.
We have got a lot of original artwork, especially for certain comics like Roy the Rovers. But like I say, there are these gaping holes as well. So that factors in what we're putting out. You've also got to kind of, you know, I base it on stuff that I grew up reading that I like and I think is popular enough. But I also kind of take on board, I do get, some people have worked out what my email address is. So I do get requests, and I do look at message boards and kind of try and gauge what would kind of shift. So there's no exact science to it, but we don't just throw out stuff willy-nilly. There's also a case of me just reading through. The best part of the job is just picking up red-bound volumes of whatever title and going through these things and just being completely tickled by certain strips.
Yeah.
And thinking, you know what, let's give this deserves to be seen again. Let's put a collection out there.
Okay.
But, it's extremely rewarding job in that respect. I think at the moment, you know, we're a couple of years in now, I think by and large we've got it right. We've got a lot of good books that we put out there, and there's some tremendous material coming up. Like I say, my head's almost squarely in 2020 at the moment, so I know we've got some fantastic books in a couple of years.
Right, okay.
Especially now, again, as mentioned, we've now acquired that wider archive. So before, the likes of the Mighty, the Spider, the Steel Claw, they were all closed off to us. Kelly's Eye, they're now ours.
They're now available as well, yes.
They're now available. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to kind of delving into some of those kind of strips and seeing what we can get out of them.
Talk about, you know, great characters who inspire Chris Weston, the Spider, you know, yeah. That's a fantastic villainous character.
Well, you know, I've been flicking through a bit of Spider recently, and my God, it looks gorgeous. Some of the villains are absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
And again, you know, there's this, I don't know who puts out here, but we perpetuate this kind of history about British comics, you know, where you get the impression, or been led to believe in certain quarters, that are quite boring and conservative and quite staid up until the arrival of 2008 and Battle and Action. All these young Turks came in, like John and Pat. Those guys are great, and of course they put British comics onto another plateau. But some of its earlier stuff is bonkers and anarchic and gorgeous to look at and fantastic. Mighty and Spider are just out to lunch. Robert Archie's mental in a really good way. Black Max, you know, even the stuff in Sugar. A Girl's Coming. Have you ever heard of Sugar?
Yes.
Yeah. There's this fantastic strip in there called Sugar Jones.
Right.
Written by one Pat Mills.
Ah, right, there you go.
It's bloody amazing. The premise of it is you've got this actress / model called Sugar Jones, who's lovely to everyone apart from her assistant. And the big shtick is her assistant's the only person in the world who knows that Sugar Jones is 40 years old.
Right.
It's crazy. Completely out to lunch. And this is what I'm saying. A lot of this early stuff is absolutely brilliant. And I'm unearthing stuff all the time that I just can't wait to put in front of people. I've just acquired a full run, but here's an exclusive. This is well in advance. I'm going to get told off, but I don't care. there was a brilliant strip that ran in Fantastic. It was one of the Oddums comics.
Right.
You know Oddums, so they had Fantastic, Wham, Pow, Smash, all those. And they mainly consisted of Marvel reprint. But there was a strip in Fantastic. Started off, it was called The Missing Link.
Right.
And it was a bit of a bit of a Hulk ripoff. But then it became this glorious beast called Johnny Future. And it's Luis Bermeira, I hope I'm getting his name right, Spanish artist.
Oh yes, I know the name, yep.
Completely sublime. This guy, you know, they talk about Jack Kirby, this guy should be every comic fan, every person that calls themselves a comic book fan, a genre comic book, they should know this guy. He's amazing. He's kind of like cityscape, you know, images of London are just brilliant. The guy never came to London, never right. visited Britain. But you'd think he was sat in the middle of Trafalgar Square. Some of these images are fantastic. The aliens in there are great, the villains are great, the people are great, the vehicles are great. It's such a brilliant strip. And it was written by Wolf Prigmore, who was one of the editors at the time over at Oddums. And a brilliantly bizarre story. Again, this is the thing from the 60s.
Yeah.
And we think, you know, all that anarchic, crazy, brilliant anarchic material, that all kicked off in the 70s. No. Johnny Future. Collection's coming out in 2020. You guys are going to love it. Gorgeous black and white tome that deserves to be in everyone's collection.
Fantastic.
I'm really excited about that.
You've whet my appetite. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Bring me back for Johnny. Okay. I'm on board for Johnny Future.
Yes. Well, that's probably when we'll meet up again then, in the in a year's time, in the same pub, probably.
Let's do that.
So that's it. Let's Sniper Elite Resistance is out now in trade.
Yep.
Get your copy. El Mestizo is out now.
Please get Sniper Elite. Please.
Please get Sniper Elite. Please get a copy of El Mestizo. And if you want to come on the podcast and talk about it, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, Black Max Volume 1 is out, and it's just tremendous. I mean, it's amazing.
Really quickly, Eamon, I know we've looked at the paperback edition. There is a hardback out.
Oh, is
there?
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Just for people that prefer the hardback market, there is a hardback out.
Because, yes, there are. I mean, like The 13th Floor, which we were talking about before we recorded, I've got the hardback edition. We've just seen the paperback edition in Forbidden Planet.
Some of these editions, everything merges into one in my little brain box, but you might have to look at the 2000 East store in order to get that hardback version.
Yes.
But there is a hardback version of
Planet. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Great stuff, Keith.
Thank you very much. Always enjoyable.
So we're going to be back here probably in a year's time talking about the Treasury again and about possibly Johnny Future.
Johnny Future, all the way.
Yeah. Fantastic.
The complete Johnny Future.
So it's been, I mean, it's a slightly noisy Friday lunchtime in London. We've had a pint of Guinness. We've talked about Black Max. I guess we've just about done everything, haven't we?
I think so, yeah. Right. Like I said, there's going to be plenty of specials out next year for everyone to enjoy. Schedule next year is looking great as well. So start saving, folks.
And we haven't even touched, I suppose, on the news in the last week about Rebellion's purchase of a new studio.
Oh, yeah. do you know what? I was waiting for that to come up. I thought we're going to reach the end without this being mentioned. Yeah, it's fantastic news. We're now kind of, we're in the film business.
Yes.
Which is very exciting. I, of course, don't know that much about it because it's well above my pay grade. But, you know, I have said to Jason, I'm happy to play Slane if they want to start making the same movie. You know, just give me a few months to move some timber,
right,
and I'm on board. But, yeah, it's happy, really exciting times, really.
I've got you down as Bill Savage.
Thanks a lot. It's the accent. Do you know what? I won't have to work out. I can just do Road Jaws.
Yeah.
Do an animated thing, I'll just be Road Jaws. Perfect.
I mean, would it be, you know, is it cautiously optimistic to say that Rebellion and the Treasury of British Comics going from strength to strength, it seems?
Yeah, well, it really
does. Great time.
It really does. And, there's a lot of excitement around the office, and rightly so. We're moving into kind of uncharted territory, really. But I for one are excited about it.
Exciting times all round, and indeed, very exciting to have these wonderful volumes of classic British comics to talk about, to look at, to treasure, and so on. Thank you very much, Keith.
Thank you, Eamon.
Thank you to everybody for listening to Mega City Book Club. As I've said, get in touch at mcbcpodcast@gmail.com, Twitter at mcbcpodcast, Facebook Mega City Book Club, or find all the links at megacitybookclub.com. And that'll do us. So from the Bloomsbury Tavern, it's a cheers from me and Keith, and until next time when we're passing judgment on another great 2000 AD or Treasury book, it's goodbye from me and
it's goodbye from me. Happy Christmas. Go and buy Sniper Elite for somebody.